welcome to episode number 66 of the Web 2.0 show. I'm your host, Adam Stachowiak. Today we're going to sit down and talk with Mike McDermott. He's the CEO and co-founder of FreshBooks.com. Mike is going to share a ton of great information in this podcast today, specifically about building a web application business. One of the more important points he's going to drive home, especially for me, is choosing the right business partner and what that means. He actually gave a talk that I was at LesConf 2009, and in that talk he had said, your choice of co-founders will be the most important decision you will make in building your business, and I couldn't agree more. I've been through two different business partners, and it's not a cool thing to go through. Anyways, if you're not familiar with FreshBooks, head to FreshBooks.com, and what you will find there is the best online invoicing tool for freelancers, web developers, startups, small businesses. I mean, it's really a fantastic tool. If you're not following me and you're not following the show, head to twitter.com/AdamSTAC and hit the follow button, and then head to twitter.com/WEB20show and hit the follow button. Can't reach out to you if you don't follow me. If you have any feedback, send it to feedback@web20show.com or directly to me at adam@web20show.com. Listen to the show. Enjoy it. Love it. Thank you for listening. I'm here with Mike McDermott. He is the CEO and co-founder of a very cool company called FreshBooks. FreshBooks does some very unique take on invoicing and time tracking, and have really made my life much, much better by their cool tool called FreshBooks. But Mike, go ahead and tell everybody who you are and kind of what you do at FreshBooks.
Yeah. My name is Mike McDermott, as you mentioned, and Adam, thanks very much for having me. I'm one of the founders of FreshBooks, and today I wear, the CEO title, which means, you know, I I'm not accountable for anything, but I'm responsible for everything. I get to work with all the team here to, you know, try and get stuff, good stuff done for our customers. That's a pretty vague answer there for you.
That is a pretty vague answer. Well, you know, I know that you wear the title and the hat of CEO and co-founder, but, you know, what role do you really play at FreshBooks today?
Okay, so I like to say my job description is I'm constantly trying to put myself out of a job. And what I mean by that is, you know, I'm the last word on a few things around FreshBooks today that I hope to not be the last word on soon. So things like, you know, our brand, our communication, the product, the vision for the company. These are all things that, you know, while a lot of people contribute to them, I'm sort of the person who has the ability to veto anything, I guess. And in many cases, I'm driving where these things are going. Like, you know, where's the product going? What is our vision for, you know, the growth of the company and the customers we're going to serve and this sort of stuff? And, you know, as I say, I'm trying to put myself out of a job. And this has been really interesting for me. I founded this company. I had no idea what the path would be like to get here or what life would be like where I am today, and, you know, really no clue about what tomorrow is going to bring. I find myself constantly trying to turn over the responsibility of making decisions in each of these areas to other people. And as we build out our team, frankly, there are people much better at doing the things we do today than myself. For example, like I used to be head of our sort of software development and sort of resource planning for the team. Now we have a guy named Corey Reed who's way better at that than I could ever be. Bean has brought so much rigor to our process here that it's just incredible. That's part of the learning experience of building a business, as you figure out, you know, where your strengths are and try and find people who are just so much better at, things that than you are, and get them on the team and let them drive the thing.
I hear that, going back on that note, I hear that you're actually not in the billing and invoicing business anymore, but what you're actually, the business that you are in is the experience delivery business. Can you tell me about that? And does that kind of play into this pushing back onto your team and helping them grow in their roles?
Well, I think that really feeds into our orientation as a team. We like to say we're not in the invoicing business per se. It's the experience business. And what we mean by that is every point of contact, you know, people outside of FreshBooks have with our brand and the company, whether it's sending us a support ticket or visiting our website, we want that experience to be in some way extraordinary. And it's not hard to be extraordinary these days. People's expectations of businesses are so incredibly low. Like, think about what you expect from most of the businesses you buy services for, whether it's your phone company or whatever. Your expectations are really, really low. And so even by offering, great customer service, we're going to exceed your expectations. And so that's what we're all about. And so we do things like, if you phone us, you don't get an automated system, you go straight to a person, right? You probably weren't expecting that. Therefore, we're exceeding your expectations, and you're going to find that extraordinary. That's what we're all about. And we figure if we continue to deliver, and exceed people's expectations every time they come in touch with us as a company, then we're going to grow the business, because people are going to be excited about that. They're going to talk about it, and no matter what business we're in, whether it's billing or something else, we will have a strong foundation for the business. I should say the category that we're in is currently billing. Our mission is to help you get paid. But we believe it's all about delivering great experiences. Our success is going to be founded on that.
At your talk in Leskov back in October, in your talk, one of the cool things I liked about what your team had done was taking that, I guess it's like a core value for you, right? Your extraordinary experience. And they actually took that idea and they surprised you on one great Monday. You came in and on the wall they had this, huge moniker on the wall painted, extraordinary experience. What was that like for you to come back in, to build a team that loves what they do so much to do that?
Well, So one Monday morning I walked in, our support team had come in the weekend. And they literally painted in about 3 foot high letters along the roof of the building, execute on extraordinary experiences every day, which is 4E. And it's a little sort of, I guess it's kind of our own internal slogan to orient ourselves around customers. So when something like that happens, a guy like me who founded a company, when you walk in on a Monday morning like that and a bunch of people have gone and done this and you didn't have anything to do it, and they took their own weekend, they came in, they painted this stuff, it looks awesome. It is, all about our customer orientation and our values. I was kind of beside myself. I was in awe, right? I was just kind of a spectator of the whole thing. And actually we were talking about, video, doing this instead of just by audio over Skype, but by video. The room I'm in right now is like a little office and there's a glass window behind me. And if we had these things on Skype, you'd actually see that in the background a little bit now that I think about it. But the bottom line is incredibly exciting to just see that, the values and the drive have gone beyond sort of the founding team and into, your customer service team is driving the thing. And we've got an amazing support team here, and they drive a lot of the culture at FreshBooks.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned culture, because I do want to talk at some point, because I think you have a very good perspective on how to choose a co-founder and what goes into that. But, I think one of the more important questions that doesn't come up, maybe it does come up, but not often enough, that, how do you build a team like you've built? Not only a team that has, the inertia to do what they've done over this weekend that you mentioned with the extraordinary experience getting painted on the wall, but, to drive culture, to drive charisma, and really have the power to propel a brand forward. How do you build a team like that?
So how do you build a team and a culture? The best answer I can give you is, one person at a time, by not settling. Okay. And so when we hire one person at a time, we're looking for two things from people. We're looking for skills. Like, can they do the job? If it's like a technical role, can they technically do it? And then fit, which is, excuse me, do they share our values? Is this person, is this somebody we can trust? Are they going to be honest with us? Do they have passion for what they do? We like to find people who would be doing whatever they're going to do for us somewhere else if they weren't doing it here, because they just love doing what they're doing and we want to channel that energy. And so, you know, and as you interview people and get to know them, you know, through the interview process, you just want to make damn certain that you've got the right kind of people, you know, you're getting the right kind of people on board, and teach the rest of your team how to identify those things. And so we've had really good success. We're only 40 people today, but I mean, our record in terms of hiring has been awesome. And I'm just really fired up at the team. But it's literally on a per person basis that we just make sure we're adding, you know, adding to the mix every time.
I'm just curious, but what kind of programs do you have, or just, I guess, just general culture of the company about personal development and personal learning and stuff like that? Like, the reason why I ask that is I recently listened to this book on my travels to Canada, actually, over the holidays to visit family, and then obviously go down to Pennsylvania to hang out there for a bit. But on my trip, I had the opportunity to listen to a book called Influencer. And this book kind of drives into not just, you know, how to – you would think that it's about how can I influence people, but it's really about, you know, changing behavior. And the reason why I ask that is, like, I do that on my own. I run my own company. I'm my own person, I guess, you know, since I'm sort of a one-man army at this point. You know, I kind of drive my own self to do that. But how do you take, you know, what we probably do to ourselves, but put that into your culture and your business? And do you have any programs that kind of leverage that?
Well, you know, to be honest, I'm going to go a little bit back to that last answer, which is, you know, the first thing you do is you get the right people involved, right? And I mentioned we like to hire people who are passionate about what they do. Well, when you find somebody who loves doing what they're doing, whether it's developing software or designing stuff or, you know, even customer service, for the most part, if they're passionate about it, they tend to research and teach themselves about this stuff all the time. Like, I can't go and tell one of our software developers what the newest, coolest thing is because they already know, right? You know, we do share a bunch of knowledge and, you know, all that kind of stuff, blah, blah, blah. But the point is that they're constantly looking for new stuff that's going to make them better on their own. So a lot of what we're doing, like, we don't really have – you know, as much around, like, we don't send, I mean, we send people to conferences occasionally, so that would be like a traditional answer. But for the most part, it's about, you know, working with other peers who, you know, people on your team who are going to grow you in some direction, right? So if you're a software developer who loves front-end programming and you're paired up with somebody who, you know, likes more back-end stuff, then you two are going to learn from each other. And then, you know, the other, you know, we do some stuff around, like, you know, monthly meetings where, I mean, one of my big goals is to teach everybody in the business about the business and how it works. So I kind of see myself as somebody who's teaching business to people who may not be inclined that way already and trying to make it halfway palatable to them, which is not always the easiest thing. If somebody just loves writing code and they don't really care about, you know, business metrics and that kind of stuff, that's a bit of a challenge for me to work on. But that doesn't mean they don't share our values. It doesn't mean they're passionate about stuff and that I'm not learning from them about other stuff. So we don't have a lot of formal programs in place, but we get kind of people who have a learning attitude, and that makes a huge difference for us.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I guess if you are hiring the right people that have the kind of right abilities that you're looking for, the proper attributes to be in the culture you have, they're just going to naturally have that fit and be propelled to learn and push themselves forward. So in your talk at LessConf, you had said that your choice of co-founders will be one of the most important decisions that you can make in building your business. I'd like to just maybe have you for a bit talk about partners and what are some of the ways that, you know, you can choose a partner, what goes into choosing a partner, and what is the essence of choosing a partner?
Okay, so a bit of a misquote there. What I actually said is it's the single most important decision you're ever going to make in building your business.
Oh, my bad.
I'd give it even more emphasis than that.
It's the single most. So there's one more word in there. Okay,
gotcha. Yeah, well, it's the most. How about that? Not one, but it is the most. Yeah. Anyways, the bottom line is nobody's good at everything. So you want to find people who help you know, round you out. Okay. And that's, you know, a co-founder should be somebody who complements you really, really well, and makes up for some of your shortcomings. And maybe together, you know, have you ever worked with somebody who, you know, maybe you're really creative, but you don't get shit done? If you work with somebody who is all about getting shit done, and, you know, perhaps is less creative, but when you two are together, you know, you can really get firing. I guess when the sum of the parts becomes, you know, sort of more the whole. So,
Mike, you're talking to somebody who's been through two partners already. So that's, you know, this is really an important piece for me, because there's some, you know, behind the scenes, there's some turning happening in my business, and I'm changing. While the Web 2.0 show has been going at a fast pace that it has been in the past few months, I really turned a new leaf on the program itself and what we're doing with it. But I've been through two partners. I know that it's like marriage. I know that it's like, you know, going through the separation, the breakup. It's much like divorce, and it sucks. It hurts. You can go into a depression of any measure, whether you like the person or not. And that's really a hard thing to go through. So, I guess you have to go through it to experience it and truly appreciate what you're saying. But I think there's so many people out there that can really just, you know, get the gist of, man, how important it is to choose a partner and what they mean.
Well, let me talk a little bit about, like, because I haven't had the experience where I've sort of had the falling away. So I can't speak to that. But I appreciate, you know, having landed on my feet with the guy I started FreshBooks with, a guy named Joe. And I've, you know, since as I've sort of grown as an entrepreneur, I've read a couple books and learned some stuff about, you know, how you can, you know, sort of spare yourself maybe some grief. And, you know, improve your odds of finding a good co-founder. So I think the first thing, there's a book called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber, and he really, to me, kind of nails what you need to be thinking about as a, you know, when you're starting at a company, is you need to kind of figure out what your strengths are and try and, as I mentioned earlier, like find somebody who complements you well. But specifically with like a technology startup, you need to figure out whether you are really one of three roles. Are you the entrepreneur? Okay, in FreshBooks' case, I'm the entrepreneur guy. But you know, it really takes three roles to get things going. You need an entrepreneur, you need a manager, and you need a technician. So I founded, to begin with, I built the first version of FreshBooks by myself, you know, like inside of a couple of weeks. And I actually satisfied all those roles. You know, I was the technician who built it, the manager who got the project done, and the entrepreneur kind of had the vision and the energy to make it happen. And, you know, from there, you know, I realized that I wasn't the best software developer in the world. So Joe took over that role, and he was interested in this project. And, you know, that demonstrated some entrepreneurialness and some risk taking on his part. And together we just started working on this. Eventually we added another guy, Levi Cooperman, who's, you know, a consummate manager guy. He's an engineer by trade. He's our, you know, head of operations now at FreshBooks. And between the three of us, we kind of had those three key roles sorted out. And the best part about it is each one of us is A, strong in those roles and really enjoys those roles and is happy to let go of the details to the other people, you know, and the responsibilities for, you know, like as the entrepreneur guy, I was kind of in charge of sales and marketing. So I took that on. Levi, he handles bookkeeping, you know, QA, and Joe built stuff for us. So it was a really good combination, because I can't stand doing bookkeeping and QA, and I'm not the best technical person. And, you know, in basically any given scenario, if you're building a business, you know, you want to find people who like those other parts that you don't, and believe it or not, they're out there. You know, I continue to be amazed by the fact there are people who love to do the things I cannot stand doing. And so you need to go and find those people. You know, I think you'll enjoy what you're doing a lot more if you can find people who do that stuff, right? But, you know, to found a company with two highly technical people who both want to be the leader, probably going to fail, right? You want to find somebody who's, you know, enjoys doing stuff you don't and lets you sort of own that piece and is going to be somebody who you can trust. And I think that's, you know, the next and perhaps even more important than them complementing your skills is you got to work with somebody you trust. And somebody who, you know, if you call them up at 3 a.m. and they see your name on the phone, they're going to pick up the phone. I call that sort of the 3 a.m. test. And that is the foundation of everything. Cause if you're starting a company, you don't have time for fighting. You don't have time for disagreements. You just it takes too much energy. And if you know you're not getting paid because you're trying to get a startup going, and you know you're staying up late, like really passionate about something, to have the drag of disagreements and dislike and mistrust, you know, it's just it's going to kill your, you know, your project before it gets anywhere. So, you know, having that foundation of trust and just, you know, honesty, frankly, is really, you know, it's the bedrock of everything if you're building a company.
I've actually been down that road with the 3M test, and there's been a few times that I didn't answer, many times when I would look at the phone and I'd say, oh man, geez, I don't want to answer this phone call. Forget it. Voicemail, you know? And that's why things went the way they went. But I thought I'd just comment back on. I've been down the road with a 3M test, and I've not answered the phone. I guess it just shows you that we weren't a fit. Okay. This isn't a crying game for me. I just, you know, I'm so passionate because we'll segue just temporarily and just jettison off for a sec. The reason why I'm mentioning this is because I'm doing something very cool. I don't know if you know this, but I started another podcast called The Changelog, and it focuses on spotlighting projects and people in open source software. And we've done some very cool stuff, and it's been a lot of fun. And the person I'm working with, not just on the podcast, but on web development projects, you know, I'm a web developer, I'm a designer developer, and he's a designer developer. And we really mix well. We're both Christians. We you know, just so many things align with us. And I kind of like the fact that I've gone down the road I've gone, because I think you never learn from doing and succeeding. You kind of learn from doing and failing, you know, because if you just do and succeed, you kind of just you take that for granted, just like you take for granted a beautiful wife and the guy next door notices she's hot and you just forget it.
I'm going to call bullshit on that.
Okay.
Because I like to think that, you know, yeah, I've sort of made mistakes, but I think I certainly made more, you know, had the good fortune so far to make, you know, a lot of good steps. For example, choosing a co-founder. And that doesn't mean I haven't learned the lessons that are important from doing that. It just means that, you know, I've continued to work to appreciate, you know, what I've learned from that and to understand why it works and that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think it's really good to fail faster. Like, I believe in that. Like, go really fast, fail as fast as you can. But, you know, I don't think you need to fail to succeed. I think that's total fucking bullshit.
Okay, my bad. Maybe I choose the total fucking bullshit. That's awesome. I guess you're right. Maybe I chose the words wrong. My bad.
No, I don't know that you did. I think there's a lot of misinformation around this out there, especially in the startup community. And you know what, Adam? I actually think this little jettison, this segue here, would be valuable for people. I don't think there's anything wrong with being in a scenario where you fail a 3 a.m. test either, right? Like, I think, you know, I think the fact that you can speak to that and that you know that it wasn't a fit because of that is actually spot on, right? And that's probably the reason, again, I don't know. I think that's – maybe this is some of the greatest value of the podcast right here.
I you know, too, also, and I'm glad you said that, because I think the one thing I'm trying to do with this show is that I'm trying to be extremely transparent and honest with what's going on in terms of just the web itself. And that's why I want to speak to people like you, because, you know, while you have this very cool company called FreshBooks and, you know, you provide a stellar service and the application itself provides immense, you know, more than immense value to me, you know, I think the true value in speaking to you is not just talking about the features and glitz and glamour of FreshBooks, but about what got you there, you know, and why you were passionate about doing what you do day in and day out, and how you built this team to do that, and how you got there without taking on VC funding, and how you started out in your basement, and how you chose a proper co-founder, and how you speak at conferences, and how you evangelize and give back to the entrepreneurial spirit and community. I think that's the most valuable thing that you know, that we can extract from this conversation, and you know, that you give back to the audience.
Well, thank you, Adam. I'm beyond flattered, and I get a lot of personal satisfaction out of sharing stuff with entrepreneurs, and frankly, learning from them too. I've got a pretty good gig.
No doubt. Since we mentioned VC funding and the fact that you didn't take it on, what is the process of going? Maybe you've already kind of told it through just your natural way of doing things, the natural way that Mike works, but How did you start with a founder, and what were some of the things you guys did? What decisions, I guess, let me restart that. What decisions did you make with not taking VC funding to get you to where you're at right now?
So I think part of the thing was, like, we actually went around and talked with VCs, not even trying to raise money, but I actually, you know, had a Toronto-based venture capitalist and went and sat down with him a number of years ago, and he introduced me to some other people. And I think the bottom line is they knew and we knew that we just weren't ready, right? And this is like 2003, right? Now, we thought we had, but, you know, we just weren't ready. And so what happened was we kind of explored that. We tried to understand the whole venture thing, and I think we recognized that we didn't. And we said, okay, forget it. This is a massive waste of time. Let's just put our heads down and see what we can do on our own. And I'll tell you, I mean, we raised a little money from my parents and from Joe's parents, and, you know, some people like that to help accelerate us. And I had a design and development shop that we used to fund the business as well. So, I mean, there are funds that we're contributing. But yeah, we basically just held off and kind of got up ahead of, you know, we're patient. You know, people say you need to, like, I remember, you know, working in my parents' basement, which we did for like 3.5 years, right? Another way to save money. And I remember thinking, oh my God, you know, if we don't do this today, we're going to miss the opportunity, right? And this is like, imagine 2005, 2006, you know, thinking that if you don't do something in the next 6 months, you're going to miss the window. Right. And, it, you know, the opportunity is over and it's too late. And, you know, here I am and it's 2010 and, you know, we're still here.
Right. Now, so you look back on that, and you're like, man, how naive was I to think that?
Well, the point is, that's exactly, you know, what I was. And, you know, and I think that's OK. I mean, I'm fortunate to have kind of gotten, you know, to another stage. And, you know, in some ways, I'm still naive about some things. Right. You know, I'm still learning. I don't know everything. And, you know, I think it's always going to be that way. And that's all right. But, I think the bottom line is also entrepreneurs. And when you're building something you're really passionate about, stuff keeps you up at night that may or may not be real. And chances are it's not. And I think sometimes just having the patience and the belief to, you know, to keep going and not, you know, upset the apple cart for any good reason, you know, it is good. And to just kind of hang in there and keep, you know, bootstrapping or whatever it is, as long as you possibly can.
So if you had, if you could make a list of things to do, say a list of 10, you're building a web app business. What's the first step? Like, what's the first step to step 1 through 10?
I mean, have you got a problem that you want to solve?
Well, I think the first one is co-founders, right? So you have to have a product or some sort of drive, some sort of direction, some sort of way you're trying to go and you're building a business. But you know, first step is usually the co-founder, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Is it? In my case, it wasn't. In my case, I had the first version of the product built before I found my co-founder.
Maybe the first step then is to have a problem.
Well, that's what I was suggesting. But for other people, it might be the other way around, right? Like, but for me, it's like, is there a problem that, you know, I can solve, right? You know, and then if so, okay, what do I need to solve that problem? Like, imagine I had a co-founder. This is a reason to maybe wait, but like, imagine I chose my co-founder and I needed somebody highly technical and they weren't. Where am I now, right? And maybe what you say is, well, it doesn't matter. You'll go add a highly technical person to the team. And you know what? That's true. You can totally do that. But I mean, you know what? I would, you know, if I had to do it over again, I would probably start with people. But maybe not. You know, I can't answer that. I don't think it matters, right? Whichever works. Either figure somebody to work with or find an opportunity. But, you know, those are probably steps 1 and 2.
Everything else is just case-by-case basis, huh?
Yeah. I mean, no. Yes and no. So, I mean, the next thing I would say is, you know, I'm a big fan of solving your own problem. Right. Because then you can hack together a solution you think works for you if you're building software and then try it on other people. Alternatively, you need to start to get to know your customer immediately. The customer development piece. I mean, you could argue that you should do that first. right? Like before you build anything, go talk to people. I didn't do that. Again, I was building something for myself. So I built for my own needs. And then I started talking to people. We made some bad product decisions early on because I built a bunch of stuff and I didn't know anything about product development. You know, and we've subsequently, we haven't even fixed all those. Some of those are still in there today. Like, God, I wish that feature was not in there.
So you have like a 3-year-old issue that you've just been hating or what?
Well, like 5 years old.
5 years. Okay.
Yeah. So it's terrible. And so, yeah, I mean, it's really important to build the least amount that you can. And anyway, so, I mean, that's probably a combination of the first stuff, right? But yeah.
I guess that's probably a good segue then into something else I wanted to talk to you about. And, you know, when I went on my, you know, 20-second rant about how Mike is great, I mentioned the fact that you give back to the entrepreneurial spirit and you give back to the community in through educational ways of doing things. And you have this workshop called How to Build a Web App Business. And I guess you're going from city to city with this. And what's the plan with that? And where did that come from?
You know, so the plan is basically to give back. Like, here is some valuable knowledge that we learned over, you know, I guess I'm in my 7th year now with FreshBooks, believe it or not. And, you know, I learned a lot of stuff that I had to learn on my own over a long period of time. And I can share with people who are building, you know, web app businesses. Or frankly, a lot of the lessons I've learned are just general good lessons for any entrepreneur. And having the opportunity to give back and share some of that stuff so people don't make the mistakes that I made or are able to learn faster, you know, is a very rewarding experience for me. And, you know, I think in terms of marketing, and I'll credit the guys at 37 Signals because they say it so well, but, you know, you can kind of outspend or outteach your competition. I look at, you know, educating other entrepreneurs as an opportunity to, you know, to share some of what I've learned and to teach them some stuff that might be of value to them. And I know that they'll go on and, you know, tell people about FreshBooks and, you know, because of that. And so that's, you know, it is a promotional thing. That's the reason I do it, but it also happens to be very rewarding.
And, I guess, so this is going, where did you start it at? Is it right in Toronto or you're kind of going around Canada for a bit and then possibly down into the States if there's enough demand?
Yeah, so I've done them in a number of places now. And I want to thank the folks at Carsonify because they actually got me to do the first one. So the first one I did was in Miami, like, I don't know if it was last year or something like that. So they said, hey, Mike, we put on a 4-hour workshop. And I said, sure. And then I realized I have to spend about 3 days trying to collect all my thoughts. And anyway, so I did that and it went really well and I polished it up a little and then sort of realized, you know what, like we could just do these on our own for people. And I held 2 of them in our office here in FreshBooks for Toronto-based people to, you know, come and learn. And then we said, you know what, like people want to, you know, people were flying to Toronto across, you know, Canada and across the States to attend these things. And so we said, you know what, like, why don't we just take these to people in various cities? And so, you know, we've gone to Boston and we've gone to Vancouver and we've gone to Chicago and you know, I've done one in London, England. And, you know, there's a number of places, you know, still to go. And we're making some plans for another one shortly. Actually, I guess I can announce this now. We haven't got it up on our website or anything, but we're going to San Francisco late in February. I'm actually going to be doing another one in Miami late in February as well. So that's kind of news from us, but, I think it's also, I mean, the people who are building web apps are like designers and developers. And you know, we happen to have a lot of designers and developers as customers, and by golly, we have an API that you can use for the billing of your web app as well. And so, you know, there's a good fit between, you know, sharing this knowledge and educating this market and, you know, frankly, you know, the business interests of FreshBooks as well.
Yeah. Before we got on the call, I actually hit up your blog and I plugged in Houston, Texas. So I'm really hoping that all the Houstonians out there go ahead and go to FreshBooks.com and check out the blog and find that post and submit the city as well. So that way we get to see you here in Houston again. I guess the customer dinner wasn't enough. You know, I'd like to see you back here if you can.
Nice. And I should mention, for anyone who's going to Future of Web Apps, run by the folks at Carsonified, in late February in Miami, I'll be there as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's that. I did want to ask you about that too, because I'm hoping to be able to get out there. I just had exchanged an email with Kerr. He's one of the guys that's works at Carsonified, and he runs the show there in terms of getting vendors and sponsors and whatnot. And so I'm hoping to be there. I might even be there with Wynn, the co-host of my other podcast called The Changelog. So hoping to be out there doing some cool stuff. I loved FOA in 08. That was the last time I was there. I think it was probably one of the most fun conferences I've ever been at in my life. And I really missed the vibe and experience that one was at. So I'm really hoping that 2010 is just the same if I get there.
Cool. We'll probably do a customer dinner, so you should come on out for us for one night there in Miami as well. And I was at that as well. That was a pretty amazing time, right? You had like Blaine Cook from Twitter there. Excuse me, Matt Mullenweg, and it was from a web app standpoint, it was an interesting point in time.
Yeah, you had Kevin and Gary. We actually did an episode of the Web 2.0 show. I think it's episode number 42. With Kevin and Gary, we did it at Nikki Beach. Remember that night at Nikki Beach?
Right.
So we did it actually there at a picnic table. You can hear the crowd behind the scenes and stuff like that. But I actually lost my voice and I sounded like DMX. my voice was shot. I don't know what happened, but long story short, I couldn't talk at all while there. And that kind of sucked because I could hear everything. Now I got some sinus issues, and I can't hear now. But then I couldn't speak because my voice was gone. But yeah, Gary and Kevin, they did a podcast with us, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, those guys are pretty entertaining. There's no question.
Since we mentioned the changelog real quick, there is one question that I had that was sort of open source focused, and I wanted to kind of talk to you about this thing you guys have. I guess once a month you do this thing with your developers called Hackoffs.
Yeah, it's actually often more than once a month too, but yeah, at least once a month we'll have a Hackoff.
And you know, what kind of things are coming out of that? Like, is it just is it internal stuff or is it external stuff? And if it's external, are there any plans to do like open source involvements or even to contribute to various projects and kind of give back through that way too?
Right. So there's a fantastic question. Like I, you know, we're doing some pretty neat stuff with like OAuth and things like that now. And so you can use like the FreshBooks API and OAuth and some stuff coming along with webhooks and a bunch of, you know, really cool open source type stuff. And so we may be contributing to those projects, but that'll probably happen more into the day-to-day stuff that we do. Hackoffs are usually like, the idea is you have one day to start and finish something. So it to some extent is somewhat, you know, limiting. And usually the way our team orients themselves is they'll build something inside FreshBooks or based on the FreshBooks API, or maybe they'll work on some internal development tool like a dev image or something like that and just improve it. You know, they've been waiting to have the time and then they'll use the Hackoff to do it. Recently, for example, you know, one developer built a stream of events from our message queue that would power like updates on our homepage. And then the next Hackoff, somebody, you know, so for example, like that stream events will say, you know, somebody in Wisconsin, you know, created an estimate.
I like that. Yeah, I saw the map. You have a map too, right? And then you're also doing
so, yeah, the homepage. Once that stream was available, the next Hackoff, you know, a different developer took that and said, I don't know if you ever saw that thing for Twitter where like, you know, little bubble pops up all over the world and you see like so-and-so is saying this over here and then it's over there.
Was that called Brightkite?
I think there's a bunch of them. The one I know is twittervision.com.
Oh, Twittervision, anyways, that's right.
So we, you know, this guy Paul created something we call a fresh map. So freshbooks.com/freshmap. And it's on our blog right now. But, you know, freshbooks.com/freshmap. And you can see like right now where people are doing things inside or just a small sample actually in real time. It's just like you can't even keep up with it. But, you know, you can see where somebody's tracking some time or collecting a payment or, you know, it's all anonymous data. But it's – anyways, that's the kind of thing that, you know, comes out of a Hackoff. And now we actually – since he built that, we bought a big TV screen and threw it in the kitchen at the office here. So that was pretty cool.
But, I love, you know, that. I mean, that is some of the most – you know, that's – I guess that when we asked the questions earlier about culture and how do you – make your team get excited about what you do. I guess you do stuff like that, right?
Well, absolutely. We try to make time, you know, for, I mean, that's what we do for the dev team. The marketing team has a fair bit of sort of creative license to do stuff that they like to do. I think just culturally, my way of looking at things is you get the right people, you know, on the team, you present them with some kind of challenge, you support them, and you get the hell out of the way. And, you know, we've had really good results from that so far.
So I'm not sure if you actually answered that part of the question, though, but is there you said you kind of give back a little bit to open source, but do you have any plans to fully on, you know, start a project that's open source that comes from these hack-offs or just something that you develop internally and give back?
So, for example, the Fresh Map is now, you know, available open source. It's in GitHub and somebody can pick through that and play with it. I don't think that's a great example, but I mean, our iPhone app that we developed is open source on GitHub. Some of the desktop, you know, widget time trackers are there. You know, a more ambitious or different kind of project, it's hard to say. I don't know. You know, members of my dev team may totally have ideas up their sleeves right now. What we're really focused on more than anything is extending our API and building it out so people can do more stuff with it. And then who knows, maybe they're going to, you know, start a project that is open source and takes advantage of it. I don't know. one of the cool things about open source and APIs and frankly software is just, you know, the room for creativity. And I can't really give you an answer with that, but I'd like to think so. Does that help?
No, sure. I mean, I guess any contribution back. I mean, obviously, I'd actually forgotten that you'd open sourced your iPhone application, and I didn't realize that. I'd forgotten about that. And I wasn't trying to accuse you of not doing it. Just that one cool thing I'd like to see, and I even asked this of David Hauser when he was on the show back in episode 61, because I think once a month they take half a day. Once a month on a Friday and let their dev team go nuts and just give back to an open source project or even just start a project. And, you know, when I heard him say that, I was thinking, you know, that's a really cool thing because you've already got this, you know, business training. You've got lots of shared and gained knowledge through your experiences. I mean, like you said, you've been at FreshBooks and going at this for 7 years. Now there's lots of things you're giving back. And at the same time, you're giving it to the entrepreneurs. So the entrepreneurs are like the open source dev community in a sense that to you. And your developers could be, you know, giving back in their own ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think our teams, I know, created some like JavaScript libraries and stuff like that, or improved on some that are out there and what have you. So I think it's happening. I mean, I kind of live on the other side of the room, so I may not be aware of half the stuff that we're doing, frankly. I'd almost like to get back to you on that and see.
Yeah, let me know for sure if there's any sort of addition to it. We'll put it in the show notes for sure.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Earlier when we talked, I don't want to glaze over this because I think it's probably a nice segue for the technical audience. But when we talked a little bit earlier about your workshop, you mentioned what you could do with the FreshBooks API, and I guess my question is, you know, from your standpoint, and maybe even if you can ask your developers later on. Their standpoint, but what has been the impact of the FreshBooks API on the business?
Well, I think it's many fold, right? We actually have, I mean, I think there's something like 40 other web applications that have integrated with us today. There's a company called Groovy Squared who went and built, you know, the iPhone app that we now actively promote called MiniBooks. Like, we didn't even build this piece of software. They just went out and built it. And it's a fantastic piece of software. And so I think, you know, you're just opening yourself up to for other people to express themselves and, you know, and just build stuff you can't even imagine by opening up an API. So, you know, what has the business impact been? Well, for now, there's just so much more value for FreshBooks customers because we've got, you know, Vista time tracking desktop widgets that we weren't going to spend the time to build, but somebody else chose to. And so now everybody benefits from that. And so it's just enormous value is created by offering an API.
And what is it, maybe this is more for the technical team to answer, but what does it take to support that API and what kind of feedback do you get from the customers that, I guess, the developers who use it?
So first of all, we're built on our own API. So we eat our own dog food with it. And the FreshBooks app runs on the API. So I think that, you know, probably says a lot about the robustness of the API and how closely, you know, how interested we are in extending it and all these kinds of things. I think that's kind of wild.
I didn't even think about that. That's really wild that it's built on top of the API. I guess your application tends to be your API, and then you sort of just open that up through, you know, giving access to various methods and various control mechanisms and stuff like that that you have available to, you know, naturally in the application. But that's kind of wild. So it's built on top of the API?
Yeah. And truth be told, it's not 100% feature complete today. And we're working towards finishing it off. And what we want to work towards doing is making it easier for other people who are building web apps, and this might be of interest to your technical audience, to do billing, and they can take advantage of the FreshBooks API. So we can, you know, help you manage your, you know, take care of your credit card transactions, so you don't have to worry about the security there. Don't have to worry about running cron jobs for your recurring bills. Don't have to worry about generating and drawing invoices. You get all that stuff for free by using our API. That's sort of worth noting for the technical folks.
Do you have any sort of favorite feature of FreshBooks that you just love to tout?
Well, I'm a big fan of our report cards. I don't know even you know about those. They've been kind of stagnant for a little while. I'll own up to that. And you know, I say this is my favorite thing, and I talk about a stagnant feature because. Well, I think it's important that we do more with them. But one of the cool things about FreshBooks is there's so many other people that use it. So, you know, what we can do for you is, you know, if you're a web developer, you know, we'll tell you, we'll create a report card for you of your business. Tell you things like how long on average it took you to get paid, you know, what was your average invoice size, the kind of things an MBA might do for you. You know, if you hired them to look at your business, but since you're not an MBA and you don't want to spend the time on it, you're not going to make those calculations. But it's pretty cool. So we create this report card with your numbers, right? And then what we do is we compare you, if you tell us you're a web developer, to other web developers who collect in the same currency as you. So you can see how you do. So if you know, like, web developers in, you know, the United States on average collect their invoices in, you know, 36 days and you're collecting in 21, well, that's pretty good. But what if it's the other way around? What if everyone else is collecting in 21 and you're collecting in 36? Is it time to maybe change the way you do things? So I think that's an incredibly powerful piece of FreshBooks.
Yeah, I could see that level of business intelligence. And I was actually biting my tongue when you said that was your favorite feature because I was thinking, yeah, I like that feature too, but it's never really given me a lot of value because it seems like it hasn't really gone anywhere more than where it's at right now. And I like the fact that you could choose what your business is, like whether it's a web developer, but you know, like FreshBooks, you're not just one piece of a business. You might have various pieces of your business and, you know, at any given time, you might be a marketing company. You might be a web application development company. You know, you might be there's pieces of your business that are different pieces. And I guess it kind of all relates to your billing, but you're not just pigeonholing yourself into just being a web developer. And not only that, but it's a free form field. Unless I'm incorrect on this, but I think it was just me typing in web developer.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you type in, we have like hundreds of sort of professions that, you know, hundreds, probably, you know, thousands now, who am I kidding?
Right.
professions that, you know, if you start typing it in, we'll kind of auto complete it for you and put it in there. And alternatively, you know, you create a new fancy one. We actually had a little, there's people in the business of doing horse painting who use FreshBooks.
Wow.
That was one of our most recent intriguing professions from the last quarterly report card. But there's all kinds, I mean, we have dog walkers, butlers, bakers, like it's kind of crazy.
Let's assume that we recorded this last Tuesday. And if I was last Tuesday and I asked this question, you might have something very cool to answer back with, but I guess it's probably just as well. But do you have anything super secret that you'd like to announce on the show that's a new feature of FreshBooks or anything cool that's happening?
Well, so are we pretending it's last Tuesday?
Sure, why not?
Okay. We've just released multi-currency in FreshBooks, which has been one of our most requested features because we have so many businesses. For example, Canadians, they often 80% of their customers will be Canadian, but 20% will be American. So having multi-currency invoicing is just massive. So we've just released that, and it's been incredibly well received. Really excited about it. It was a ton of work on our back end, because you imagine a billing app going from a single currency to multi-currency, and our dev team just crushed it. And I want to put a shout out for anybody who's looking, who's building a web app, subscription revenue, to drop an email to integrations@freshbooks.com. If you're looking for more features in our API than you see available to you today, and that's kind of a little under the hood special announcement for Web 2.0. So if for anyone out there who's looking for basically to build their billing engine for a web app, drop us a line. If you're building a web app, think about us for your billing engine. And if you're missing some features that you want, drop us a note. Maybe we can help you out with those.
I wasn't really aware that that you can actually power a web app's billing engine on FreshBooks. So that's kind of why that you mentioned that. So is that similar to what Chargeify would do?
Truth be told, I could be better versed with Chargeify than I am, but I think I get the concept. And I mean, when you think about what FreshBooks does, like it's we actually do recurring billing for our customers inside FreshBooks today, right? Like we have a lot of web hosts who charge automated recurring fees with credit cards, and we do that for people through like 14 gateways today already. All right, so we are a billing engine that lives inside the FreshBooks interface for people today. And what we're doing is just expanding more of our API so people can basically build their own systems, inside their own interfaces more easily and manage parts of that inside FreshBooks, or build their own interfaces to manage parts of it as well.
Gotcha. So it's more like bare metal versus the full-blown Here It Is app.
What I mean by that is,
if you went to – an example could be that you can go to Media Temple and get hosted pretty quickly, or you can go to someone like Linode, who is a bare metal VPS web host, but you've got to put Ubuntu on there. You've got to do all the Apache installation. So it's – you could go to Media Temple that's already got all that stuff ready to go, or you can go to bare metal and build yourself.
Yeah, except that FreshBooks, the web app, actually has a lot of – the functionality that you'd want, being able to, create a recurring bill for somebody and that kind of stuff inside our existing interface. So it's kind of like a third sort of option, right? Because you have this interface that's, quite feature rich to do a lot of things like manage your customer base, run reports, help you accept credit cards and all that stuff. That is literally FreshBooks, the billing application, the web app. And then you have the API that's available so you can extend and do, basically anything you want in your own systems using the API.
That's kind of wild too. There was a last year when we were building an application, they said, can we integrate this directly into FreshBooks? And, I mentioned the API and the fact that we could, and it didn't end up actually happening. But, that's kind of wild. That's actually a question that people, I'm sure, often ask. I just didn't kind of tie it into a subscription-based web service like a 37 Cents kind of app or anything like that at all. I didn't connect the dots, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. No, I think that's pretty common with folks.
Gotcha. So I'm in the percentile then. Sweet.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, again, there are some key features that are missing via the API today that are available in the app. And this is, again, drop us a note at integrations.freshbooks.com if you're interested in exploring some of that stuff. And we'll be talking about more of that later.
Cool. Mike, before we close out, I just have one personal question. Do you plan on actually making it out to Les Cruz or Les Conf 2010 this year?
So I'm doubtful that I'll go on Les Cruz, time being what it is. Though, Stephen and Alan are awesome, and I really enjoy I had such a good time at Les Conf number one that, I'm inclined to say I'll go back. Having said that, I have no idea what my schedule is at the time of the year this year, so I can't really say or make any commitment at this time, but certainly a great show. And and these guys, we do, invoicing and accounting, so we're in similar space, but I have a petition in suggesting attending one of their events. It was a really intimate, really quality speaker kind of show, and I had a great time.
And just for those of you out there who are wondering when Les Conf 2010 is, it's slated to be May 21st through 22nd in Atlanta, Georgia. If you want to know some details, you can go to lessconf.lesseverything.com. If you want to be a super friend, you can go to superfriends.html on that URL. But that's it. That's it, man. Thanks, Mike. I mean, you know, I'm not going to reiterate what I said earlier, but I think, you know, everything you're doing with your company and evangelizing and giving back to the entrepreneurs of this world and the future web app developers that are, you know, going to be building apps like FreshBooks or their own versions of various things out there. You know, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and share your knowledge and share your advice. And it was really, really awesome having this time to talk with you.
Awesome, Adam. Thanks. No, great speaking with you as well. And thanks for the invitation and glad to have been here.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Web 2.0 Show. Be sure to check out web20show.com for links in the show notes or to leave a comment on the show. Thanks for listening.